Want to tell you about Racetech, racetech.com, suspension work, motor work, all of it going on, privateer proven. Racetech can get your bike dialed in and give you a bit of a discount as well. If you tell me you listen to the Steve Mathis Show or Pulp MX, racetech.com, Racetech Rants. I got a Racetech rant. More people should use the code to save with suspension and motor work because Racetech can do it all and help you enjoy riding your dirt bike more. All right? Use the code SAVE, racetech.com. All right, on to the show.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motosport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Say that dedication in your frustration.
Welcome, everybody, to the Fly Racing RacerX podcast with Andy Regis Harrington, former pro rider. I was his mechanic for a little bit, too, at Factory KTM in 2000, so me and Regis go way back. Super good to catch up with him on this podcast about what he's doing now with Covert Cameras, his YouTube channel, all of his work, and we get into some racing memories as well. Super good guy, and hey, Tim Ferry mentions also. That's never a bad thing. Fly Racing, flyracing.com. Check it out on the web. Use the code to save at flyracing.com. And whether it's a Formula helmet, whether it's Evo gear, kinetic mesh, if it's hot where you are, and it's June right now, try the mesh gear. It's super lightweight, super vented. Really, really great stuff. Thanks to the folks at Fly Racing for making things happen for us. Best gear out there, bro. And use the code to save at flyracing.com. Pulpamex saves you on anything they got over there. So thank you for that. We'll tell you more about motorsport.com later on in the show, but Maxxis Tires as well. Maxxis Tires, Fast Freddy Norn. Mountain bike tires are great. Tires developed by Jeremy McGrath, used by Supercross and Motocross race teams, main event guys, all of that. Maxxis.com, love those guys. And also Renthal, Renthal.com, and Factory Honda, KTM, Kawasaki, using Renthal products, of course. Sprockets, chains, bars, AP, using a special twin wall and riding really good. And the Fat Bar 36, don't forget about that thing as well, the lightest, strongest bar out there. And mountain bike parts are fantastic. They've got some new things coming for there down the road. Renthal.com, made over there in the UK to the highest standards around. So love the guys at Renthal. Thanks for listening to this podcast with me and Regis. Appreciate it. Some good stuff in here about stunts, dirt biking, Red Dog, Supercross, Motocross, all of it. All right, please enjoy. Okay, as promised here on the Fly Racing RacerX podcast, my old rider at Factory KTM back in the day and a man who was eclipsed his racing career with his work in the stunt industry in Hollywood. It's Andy Regis Harrington. What's up, Regis? How are you, buddy?
Good. How you doing, boss?
I'm good. Thank you for doing this. Appreciate it. I just thought it was time to catch up. I mean, you've been on the Pulp Show. We've done one of these before. But yeah, it's been a while, so why not?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you reaching out. It is always an honor to go back and talk about the good old days and the future with you and, you know, all that good stuff. Yeah.
Your name came up, I forget, not with Red Dog, but with somebody, and they were telling me again about just how successful this Covert Camera business has been for you. You invented this motorcycle that, you know, that you can mount cameras all over the place, and Hollywood has loved it, and you lease the bikes out to people, you drive it yourself, you all of this. And so, man, Regis, life is good for you, seems like.
Yeah, well, I mean, you might have seen it in the news and stuff right now. The actual film industry is kind of flat on its face, and it has been for a bit with some strikes and
I feel like it's coming back, though, no?
It is, yeah. No, there's like a lot of talk. I think the fire is being stoked right now, but yeah, it was a rough like year and a half, but we're getting through it, and we got a lot of exciting things that gave us some downtime here. Mm-hmm. We got some new people trained up that we're ready to announce the part of the covert world. We got exciting things, and I think that we made such a good impression the last decade that once it comes back, we'll be firing again for sure.
So we had a strike for a while, or the writer's strike, right? And then we had COVID hit. So you're telling me we're not through the industry, the Hollywood industry is not through that yet?
No, it was basically like the perfect storm. I mean, and unfortunately, when I mean people will be listening to this, they'll think Hollywood, they think actors and big. You know, name people and millions of dollars, but there's a gigantic industry out here of everything that it takes to get on a movie. People, I mean, I think you came out and saw Charlie's. You saw exactly what happened out there. I mean, I was blown away at being out there for that was one of my first shows too. But I mean, the camera department, the grip department, costumes, catering, camera. There's you know, when you. Most people don't stick around and watch credits at the end of a film, but there's thousands of people that it takes to make a movie. So when something like this happens, it's not the actors and the actresses that suffer, but it's the whole workforce behind it. So
yep.
It was just kind of the perfect storm. I mean, COVID hit and, you know, we got all shut down, and then we were lucky enough to get on a movie right away. And it was crazy. We went to Morocco, and we air freighted one of our bikes over there and a bunch of equipment. And, I think it was Morocco. And then we also did another one, but it was Indiana Jones, and it was, the last Indiana Jones. We did like the whole chase sequence with the tuk-tuk. We filmed that. And then we did a Jurassic World over there too in Malta. And, one of the first two shows coming back after COVID, and it was nuts. It was back when they secluded us in a hotel. We didn't get out. We didn't see anybody. We lived in a bubble, and they did the COVID test that was like 18 inches long through your nose. That like literally went down into your stomach. You had to do it every day. It was torture, but we got through it, and things started picking up. We were rocking and rolling, and then the writer's strike happened, and that was kind of like, ooh, that's gnarly. Mm-hmm. Got through that, and then the Screen Actors Guild actually struck, and that lasted 8 months. So there was nothing for 8 months that was being filmed. So that was really tough.
And so when did that end?
That ended, at the end of 2023.
Okay.
Yeah. At the end of 2023. And my first job back, when some people will get a kick out of it, you'll probably get a kick out of it. I don't even know if everybody caught it, but our first job back was the newest season of Outer Banks.
Okay.
That just came out. And we did a whole motocross, the Kildare Enduro, they called it, where the main characters raced for all the money that they had gotten. And that was fun. There was about 10 of us. And our vehicles actually shot the whole action sequence. But then for some reason, word got out to the directors and the stunt coordinators, and they remembered me as a rider. So I freed up one of the positions in our camera vehicles, and I was actually a rider in the race.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was the Pogues versus I forget what they call them, the bad guys versus the bad guys. And I was nicknamed Pogue Daddy. I was, I was not supposed to be out there with a bunch of the young kids, but I'll tell you what, Steve, I was putting it to them.
Nice.
I was on a 450 Cowie on the beach and all that stuff. And then, I don't know, 2 days before the end of it, we're getting ready to leave, and we're asked to stick around an extra day because they're going to cast an announcer for the race to tie in the race together so that the audience understood. And I opened my big mouth and said that I was standing right there. So I actually got cast. Watch that first episode. It's pretty funny. I'm the race announcer.
So now you're getting residuals.
And I'm also
now you're getting residuals. You're getting money for stunts. Your camera.
Oh,
you're getting
man.
Money for
it was a great show
yeah,
for me.
You crushed
it. Was a great show for
cashing
me.
Cashing in. So when the strikes are going on and COVID, like, how you're just living off your savings? You just got just a nest egg? And because, like, no one's – are you able to – to do anything with your bikes or anything with your skills or anything, like, or is it just hunker down?
Yeah, no, we were definitely hustling at the shop. We were, trying to figure out the newest and next, we started with the e-bike, which was amazing, and it really put us on the map. But now we have 7,000 square foot shop in Georgia here, and it's full of millions of dollars of equipment. We really try to think outside the box and capturing action in different ways. So mm-hmm. we got a full little, well, not a full, but a little machine shop and a bunch of ex motocrossers that live and breathe and work at Covert with me. And, just with my experience on set, we're always trying to build new vehicles and do stuff, and they're all pretty successful. So we got back to the drawing board on that. And, I don't know, during the strike, I actually got into riding a lot again. And, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but old Tim Ferry, the writer I think I stole you from initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you guys had a great 99.
We did, yeah.
And then you saw the writing on the wall and came over and jumped ship with me on KTM, which
absolutely.
Was
yep.
pretty admirable. And then, but anyways, he was riding a little bit. And so we started ended up riding, and then ended up being three times a week. And then I was thrown into the motocross vet of nations over at Farley Castle. Red Dog got me a spot. And I ended up riding like a 1980 Husqvarna 450. And it was a great experience. And I held it down for Team USA somewhere in between the 19th to 24th place finish per moto. But it was a great experience. I loved it. So yes, I still love to ride. It's still in the blood.
How are the shoulders?
Dude, they're not. It was not good. It was horrible. My biggest problem at that race was I got hooked up with a full Husqvarna factory vintage team over there, mm-hmm. and I had no idea what I was walking into. But I got there, and it was trailers and tents, and it was like, oh gosh, this is big. Mm-hmm. And the coolest thing of the whole experience was I could not start the bike because it was a left-handed
bike. Right.
And I had a mechanic that would put motocross boots on and start it for me. So that was amazing. But Moto One, we had a little catastrophe. He started it for me, and in Europe they do it like the old, just like every other race, you get in like the staging session, and then once you go to the gate, you're by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I promptly killed my bike.
Oh.
And so I could not get outside assistance, so I tried running down the hill and starting it and bump starting it, and I skid. And the gate took off, and right as it took off, I just gave her one good Hail Mary, and she fired up and
got it
back on the gate. Yeah. Nice. But by that time, my heart rate was at about 190. I was spent. I was tired.
All right. So I know you've gotten into this before, and like I said, on other shows and things like that. Now, you're in Louisiana still, or where are you at? No, Georgia.
No,
sorry, you're in Georgia.
Right. Yeah. I had relocated to Louisiana because it was a big tax incentive state.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved out there in 2011. And then in 2018, Louisiana is still awesome, and they still have some projects going on. But as the company grew and we started getting more involved with bigger budgeted shows and a lot of Marvel and Disney. And I mean, we've been very lucky to be a part of the action in the majority of shows that people watch on TV. So, the bigger budget shows started kind of basing out of Atlanta.
Yeah. That's for the Marvel
busy up here.
Marvel's all shot there, right? They got a compound or something, I guess, or it's all out there.
Yeah. So they were running out of studios out here that rivals any Hollywood studio or is better.
Mm-hmm.
But they took control of that, and basically all those streaming shows and stuff that were out for those few years, they were all shot here in Georgia.
Okay, so like I said, you've said this before, but for new listeners or whatever. So you get into the stunt industry after your motor career ends. Dave Castile, Rich Taylor, all that kind of stuff. You've already got your tramp stamp tattoo at this point, and life is good.
Yes.
How does the idea – because – putting a camera on a motorcycle is not a new thing. They've done it in the 70s and 80s. Like it's been done in the movie world. But how do you come up with the idea of I can make this better? I got better ideas. I know I put you in touch with John at W for wheels at some point. And you're like, I can do this bigger and better and everything else. How does that idea come to you? And tell us a little bit about like what the first thing that you did that made it so successful, Covert Cameras.
Man, it was crazy. So I was actually over in the Philippines and I was doubling Jeremy Renner on one of the Bourne movies, mm-hmm. wherever they did that 450 chase. Mm-hmm. And our good buddy Godbod, Dave Castillo, was over there and he was actually riding the camera bike that was provided to the production from a company. Mm-hmm. And so he was over there riding that. And it was actually a Piaggio 125, like three-wheel scooter.
Okay.
So Dave still takes the cake as the most insane camera bike rider I've ever seen because he was vlogging this thing.
Yeah.
And what really happened was I was asked to go to set. And I had an actress, Rachel Wise, that was a part of it. So she was on the bike with me, which was nerve-wracking in itself. Mm-hmm. But as soon as Dave started his bike, it being a two-stroke, it started smoking. And I was like, I was brought back to heaven. I was like, man, smell that Motul or Pennzoil, whatever they got over there. I was like, oh, man. If the only thing that could make this better, if it was Maxima, that's what I was thinking. And she literally, the actress freaked out, said she couldn't breathe. She couldn't smell. She couldn't work with this vehicle.
Okay.
I'm not joking. Like right before we call action, she's like, I can't breathe. And I was like, whoa, what's going on?
This is the same, by the way, sorry to interrupt you, but I do that a lot, but this is the same world that when I went to Charlie's Angels, when they yelled cut, Lucy Liu couldn't hold an umbrella. Someone else had to hold it to her and then give her water. And then
same world.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. So she freaks out and then we're ready to, I mean, there's hundreds of people. We're ready to shoot this scene. I'm already sweating bullets. We're literally in a shutdown fish market. Mm-hmm. And then, in our world, they do a wet down, they call it. So they water the ground.
Yep.
Because it just glistens and looks better than regular asphalt.
Yeah.
And I'm on a 450 and I'm already sweating. Like I got to go racing down. I got to chase Castillo. He's leading us
in the move. Like you're not a stunt. You're not a camera guy at this point. You're the actor. You're the stunt guy.
Correct. Right. At this point, I'm the stunt guy. Right. I'm Jeremy Renner.
Right.
I hate to spoil everybody, but when it was him on the bike, wasn't him, it was me. So spoiler alert. But I'm already just petrified that I'm going to wash the front end or, you know, I'm mm-hmm. on knobbies. I'm deathly afraid, but I'm like, okay, we got it. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it work. And then she calls cut. She goes running off stage and I'm sitting there or off the set. And I'm sitting there and Dave and I are kind of chuckling about it. Like, man, that like, if we could bottle this up, I'd wear it all day. It smells so good. Like we're just kind of like freaked out about it. So they actually scrapped the scene for the moment because they just couldn't really get her to commit to do it. And, you know, she couldn't get in her character or whatever.
Dave Castillo, by not cleaning out this piece of shit two-stroke.
Yeah, he's the brainchild of my business. Yes.
Because if he would have taken out back, revved it up, you know, cleaned it out.
Yeah, but Dave's lack of paying attention, he mm-hmm. spurned a lifetime of happiness.
Yep.
So
good job, Dave.
And he'll be the first to tell you if mm-hmm. you ever run into him, he'll let you know for sure that all the credit goes to him. But literally right at that moment, I was like, why don't they have an electric one of those?
Yeah.
And I just started asking questions. As a stunt guy, I didn't even know how movies were built or made. Mm-hmm. I was literally like, hey, get on this bike. Don't crash. The actress is with you. Go down the mm-hmm. turn left. We'll call cut. She'll get an umbrella. You ride back to one and wait.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, that was my job.
Yep.
So, but I just started asking questions on that job. Like, well, who owns this bike? And then I know Dave's getting paid to ride it as a stunt guy. Mm-hmm. So I just started asking questions and everything. And then I literally, one of the nights in the hotel room, started researching electric bikes and I came across the Zero bikes.
Yeah.
This is back in like 2013. So they had like mountain bike brakes and it was just kind of in the infancy of the, you know, street bike electric world. So long story short, I took the money that I made on that job and I came home with the idea and I called my good buddies at Motor World of El Cajon who were a zero dealer, and I bought the bike and I dropped it off and had napkin sketches, and it was just a crazy journey for like 6 months. I kind of built it like other people had it built. Mm-hmm. But I had a really good fabricator guy that does a lot of work for Yamaha named Jeff Pology, and I showed him what I wanted to do, and him being outside the industry was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I told him what I wanted to do, what the industry did, and he's like, why would you do it like that? That's so kind of dumb. Yep. Do you mind if I take a chance at designing it? And I said, yeah, and he came up with the design, and I thought it was amazing, and I get to Louisiana, and I'm telling all the stunt people that I have this bike. And it literally sat for probably 6 months in my garage. Okay. I thought it was the biggest waste of money that I ever did. And
this, you like would be selling this to stunt coordinators? That's what you would do?
Because I didn't know how the operation mm-hmm. worked back then. I was just a stunt guy. So I was going to coordinators and saying, hey, I got a camera bike. And they're like, yeah, that's great. Okay, great. We'll tell people.
Cool, man.
But just like you said, everybody, they've been around forever. So when everybody heard I had a camera bike, they're thinking of the old side hacks, the old loud ones and everything. And I really didn't even know what I had. It was literally just a Regis moment where I had pure gold and I didn't know how to use it. And then finally I got a phone call from somebody that heard I had something from somewhere, and it was an electric thing. So they asked me to bring it down and show it to them. And I unloaded it and I rode it up and down the street.
This is a stunt coordinator?
No, this was actually the director and the DP.
Okay.
Actually I got to the top of the food chain by accident.
Right.
So, and I built the thing thinking, you know, Born Legacy, Born, Fast and Furious, high speed chases, pro motorcycle rider.
And what you saying, were you saying like, hey, this isn't going to get the actresses upset? That was the only thing that I had.
Was like, and it doesn't even smell and it's not hot. So they can't like get burned. So I went up and down the street at 60 miles an hour. And then I came back and they're like, how slow can you go? And I'm like, how slow? Mm-hmm. And I just did circles around them and they were just like, kind of like, I saw them whispering and talking and I was like, all right. And they're like, thanks for showing it to us. We'll be in touch. And I kind of thought it was a failure. Like, man, mm-hmm. you know. Well, then they called the next couple of days and they said what they're actually shooting was a football movie in Louisiana. And it was like over 6 weeks and it was at 8 different fields and no vehicles were allowed on the turf fields. Because of gas powered. And they're like, so would you want to do a test with us with your bike with football players? And I said, sure. So we went and did a test. And then because the camera can go off the front or the back, I mean, it was just struck of gold. Like, you know, the old football movies, people steady cams were running or they laid dolly track and then they got to paint them out. And so we literally put the bike anywhere and I could be right next to the guy running, or, you know what I mean? Like you could take like the guard or the tackle. I don't know football too much and got made fun of all the time on the movie, but like the center would hike the ball and I would put the camera off the back of the bike, like right next to the center. And then when the running back got the ball, I would just go straight and he'd be running and then people would be falling and tackling them right behind me. Mm-hmm. And there was like, they'd get the shot and then there was no reset. And if they wanted to move me, they just moved me 10 feet over. So like,
yeah, think about
that
moving,
was the start of
a track, right? They got to lay a dolly and
So now it's like halfway through the day and they're like, we're already done. Like, we got everything. Let's dream up of more stuff. So at that moment, I realized that I had a completely different camera vehicle, and I wanted to get away from calling it a camera bike because it was more of a like a high-speed dolly or like mm-hmm. it was just a different platform that no one had ever saw. So immediately after that, there was Jurassic World that was coming and shooting in Louisiana, and lo and behold, the stunt coordinator who hired me on Bourne was the stunt coordinator on that one. And I reached out to him. His name was Chris O'Hara. And I was like, hey, Chris. And he's like, hey, buddy, there's no motorcycles. I couldn't really use you. And I was like, yeah. I don't really need to talk to you. I mean, I love you, but I need to talk to your DP mm-hmm. and your director because I have this camera platform. And he's like, yeah, you're a camera bike? I'm like, yeah, it's not a camera bike. And he, you know, so I got him convinced to allow me to bring the bike down to the production office And then I just waited for hours until the DP and the director walked out. And then I just, my whole sales pitch was about how slow I could go. And you could do walk and talks, and you could do different shots like that.
No noise, no nothing.
And it was literally booked on the spot for like all of Jurassic World.
Now, was this like at a really good rate? Were they like, hey, we'll just take a chance on you? Like, were you like, hey, there's money in this, like more than tumbling through cardboard boxes?
Well, going back to the first job, I didn't even know how much a camera bike rented for and stuff. And I was real lucky because the producer was from Louisiana and he was a really good guy. So he called me and he was like, so you get paid as a stunt rider to ride it? And I'm like, yes.
Yep.
So like, it's basically my job is now to be a stuntman and get residuals and do all the good stuff, but I'm not supposed to crash and I'm supposed to film.
Right.
And so he was like, okay, well, how much does the bike rent for? And I literally was just honest. I said, I don't know. What's it go for? And he really helped me out. So then I rented the bike for that basically run of the show. And then I was paid to ride my own bike. So
nice. Yeah. So you're
that's
like,
when I
good.
Went, holy right. crap, this is good. This is really good.
Yeah.
So after Jurassic World, I mean, they did a big behind the scenes on the DVD and it featured the bike. And then that kind of just blew, that just started going crazy.
Oh, like actual Hollywood people watched it and then contacted you?
Yeah.
Oh,
like
okay.
It just started spreading like wildfire throughout the industry that there was this guy that had this bike and it was not, it's a camera bike, but it's not a bike. And you can do all these really cool shots. Like in Jurassic World, I think the first one when Chris Pratt, like every time he's running, like I'm literally either in front of him or behind him or next to him on the bike instead of having someone run or having some sort of, you know, contraption. And it just alleviated a lot of the setup time and a lot of the planning and everything, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So it just takes off from there.
It just took off from there. And then basically one bike became two. And then at one time I ended up with like five bikes.
And you had Alta,
like,
right? You switched to an Alta at some point?
I actually switched to, not Altas. Oh. They were called it was just before the Altas. They were called Brammos and then Victory Bottom. And then right after I switched them all over, they killed the brand and you can't get parts and you can't get nothing. So
I thought you went to an Alta. No,
I never did.
Okay.
No, not the Altas.
Where are we at with Starks? We got Starks now?
No, I actually, I'm very, very proud of, it's just crazy. Our whole little El Cajon crew has done so well in life. It's amazing. But Rags is from Stasic.
Yeah.
You know, he worked with us at KTM. He was, what was his name's mechanic?
Thane, Roderick
French
Thane.
Guy. Roderick Thane, yeah. So Ragland and I have known each other for, you know, since high school when he moved out. And then now he went to Stasic and then he's got his hand in Harley. So we just took possession of a bunch of new, the Harley Livewires, and we're transitioning over to the Harley Livewire
for
all of our camera bike needs.
Well, yeah, I was thinking even for some off-road stuff, can they do what a Stark could do or even a Zero, you know, or that doesn't matter. You don't really need suspension and that stuff.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. And again, another thankful moment of my racing career, the guys over at Yamaha who are here now here in Atlanta, Derek Brooks and Steve Nessel, all those guys. I was able to reach out to them and they really helped me out and got me, this is where you helped me as well. We built a 450X into a camera bike, because I knew that the sound and the motor and everything wasn't a big deal on this one. And, and we used that to shoot that entire tuck-tuck chase scene in Morocco for Indiana Jones.
For the Dial of Destiny one. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So when we were building that bike is when I reached out to you, and even JT gave me some fly gear. So I got a lot of behind the scenes of me on the with Moroccans and on camels. And
now,
and then John at W gave me some really cool. So I had the, I basically just built another set of wheels in case we were on sidewalks or asphalt. I just put the dirt track wheels on there. And then if we ever got in the dirt, I had the knobbies.
Right.
So.
Wow. So how many bikes, equipment, employees does Covert Cameras have now?
Man, we graduated from bikes into like, they call them like, a lot of people recognize them as like, they call them Russian arms.
Okay.
Or Ukraines now. But they're the big cranes that sit on top of the cars. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but they're basically like, I don't know, they're like really, really expensive gyro stabilized cranes that go on the roof of cars. So we have like a BMW X5M with the crane. We have a Dodge TRX with the crane. And then, so we have like just an arsenal of vehicles over here.
Hold on. So is there a company that did that, or did you start that also as kind of a unique thing, or was there a company
that
did that
too? No, there
were
already reputable companies and stuff in there, but as we grew Covert and as we became kind of a staple for action, I was getting calls all the time like, well, we want to use you. Do you have an arm car? Do you have a crane car? And I was like, no. So
you're
I finally got one.
But I can get one.
That's exactly how it was.
I guess
it was like, I guess now I know how this works. I will have one built in a month.
And I guess if you're a producer, you're like, I don't want to contract a crane car company and Regis for dirt bike Covert. I just want to write one check and one company. Right. Like,
right.
Yeah.
And I think I was so bright eyed and bushy tailed coming into the business that I was a pleasure to work with. Cause I was just like, you need one, I'll give you two. I'm like, how much is the second one? Well, you got one, I'll just bring the other one.
Yeah,
you know? So
it was
kind of like,
dude,
you know, and then it was just kind of mesmerizing for me to go to like, you know, to have this just explosion and growth of work. And then I was able to utilize, I still am able to utilize like the stunt guys that ride all of our vehicles. Like, and in this world, you know, people don't come from, a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't. So like when you have a camera bike, it was usually a stunt guy, and no disrespect to them, but they were weekend warriors or people that raced back in the day. And you know what I mean? And so now I'm like sending Dave Castillo or guys like Joe Dryden, who's phenomenal on a street bike. And like, you just show up with a different crew and a different ability set. And it's like, wow, you know, so we really did well.
Can we get Hollywood? Can we get Jimmy some jobs?
Man, I would love. The
he's
crappy
a legend,
thing was,
dude. He's a legend.
I know, and I truly believe he's a legend. And I grew up around him in San Diego Arena Cross,
right.
All kinds of good stuff with Holly. But I moved to Louisiana, and he's just been Southern California. So the business kind of changed, and it went. It's Hollywood's. I mean, the film industry is known as Hollywood, but there's not a lot done in L.A. anymore.
He'll fly out there. He'll go out there.
I know. It's tough to...
Can you just make me a promise to try to get Jimmy a job?
Yes.
Because
I will reach out to Jimmy.
He still sends me photos of his Italian job residual checks coming in. He'll send me a photo. It'll be like $200 because it played on TBS or something. And I'm like,
I still get Disney motocross residuals for like 16 cents.
Nice. Fantastic.
So
you've grown this thing. Congratulations. It sounds awesome. So successful. That's great. And again, like Rags is doing great as well with Stay Sick. I mean, God, Rags is a bajillionaire probably at this point. So you've got cars and bikes and quads. Employees, the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Right now, I don't have anybody that's full time at Covert as an employee. We had an operations person, and then we had a mechanic, and we had a scheduler, but it just died over the last year and a half. So as we're kind of getting back on our feet and going, it's just kind of me here doing that part, but I have a great team that comes in all the time, and we're doing stuff. So,
do you use special cameras, or the cameras you use are traditional Hollywood cameras for bikes and cars, or have you done anything like cool in that end of things?
We don't. The beauty of this business model and us is we drive and provide the equipment, and we go to set ready for cameras. So I don't have to.
Okay.
There's so many different cameras now with Reds and Sonys and Panasonics. And so the camera department and the director of photography, they have that all set up their end. So we show up and we just basically are ready for the camera department to hand us their camera.
And the mounts are all the same. Mounts are all basic.
Exactly. Like, yeah. They're all universal. And then we run the right cabling and everything that goes from the car inside. Like if you get in one of our arm cars, it's literally like a space shuttle. You have the driver's cockpit, and then you have the camera operator that sits in there. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that's pulling focus. And then usually the crane operator himself. So, I mean, there's four different monitors and cables. And so we're all able to look at what the camera's seeing from inside the car.
Yeah.
to design the shot and everything.
It is really awesome that with the success you've had, and it all kind of like Moto World, Yamaha started it, Yamaha's involved, you know, W, Fly, like you, Rags, like you lean on a lot of your moto connections from, you know, when you were a kid racing motocross. It's really, really neat that way.
It's been such a blessing on my end. Like, you know, when I stopped racing, quote unquote, my career, like all of us, I started riding at 5 and then, you know, I just kind of had my injuries and kind of knew that, I thought that I gave it everything I had. I really did, but I was 23 years old and I did not know what effort really was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought I had it. I thought I did it, but I still thought that, like, you know, and so when I stopped racing, it was a real eye opener to get into the real world. I actually went and worked at I've always been surrounded by great people, but, I worked at Ready Filter. I don't know if you remember that. That was the Maxima Filter. Now the DT1 used to be Ready Filter, and, there was great people there then, but there was no money in moto. So I actually worked for 5 years in an auto body shop, just being an estimator. And then,
what's his face? Was the San Diego guy that we used to hang out with?
Greg Carter.
Yeah, Greg Carter. Yep. Yeah. I've had lunch with that guy a bunch of times.
Yeah. So, and then my relationship was still good with Moen because him and Carter were so good friends. And so, like, I've always been surrounded by good people. And then, the movie thing just, and I know we've touched on this a lot of people know, but because of my size and stature, like my first 11 stunt jobs were being women in movies. So like when you came out to Charlie's, I had a wig on and I was Cameron Diaz's stunt double.
Yeah.
You got to poke fun at me and laugh and
that
was all good. But and then the world changed and, you know, you really can't do that anymore.
Really?
Stuff like that. Like,
what?
Well, we've been blessed that there's a lot of new female riders that kind of went into the stunt world. Like Jolene Van Voot is a stunt woman and she can. So now there's actual people that can. Tara Geiger, I worked with her.
Okay.
Brittany Marcotte from Southern California. I mean, there's actual women that can ride now.
Okay.
I don't know if they would have wanted to do the Charlie's freaking supercross track, but.
Right.
That thing was gnarly. But there was it's changed a lot in that aspect. So I kind of got my foot in that way. And then,
So how much real stunts do you do now? Stuntman work, like throw through a window, glass window, stuff like that. How much of that do you do?
Maybe 10% of my work now, but I'll still like doing the Outer Banks thing was really cool. Cause they had 10 different riders out there and then I showed up and I was 20 years older than all of them. Red Dog was out there with me. So we had a good laugh about like, I became the guy that had to get the start every time. And then I was roosting people and it was a real confidence booster. Cause I still had like some skills.
Nice. Regis Harrington here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Code PulpMX to save at flyracing.com and get yourself some gear. Cooper Webb, RJ Hampshire, Hymus, all these guys, Dean Wilson, code PulpMX to save with Fly Racing, flyracing.com. And of course, motorsport.com as well. Go through the banner on PulpMX.com to help us out. And they have a driven to ride sweepstakes going on right now. Speaking of Yamaha, grand prize is a YZ450. They got weekly prizes each week. And all you got to do is go there and enter for free. And buy something while you're at it. Great prices. Free shipping over $79. And I think I call it Driven to Ride. Ultimate Ride Sweepstakes. It's called motorsport.com. So you've got this business. Hollywood stuff is picking up. I know I listened to this Showbiz podcast, and they told me the last year before COVID, and I could have my numbers wrong, there was 114 movies released. And last year there was like 30. It was nuts. Like whatever the number was, number of movies released, right? So the business is picking up. How do you decide, Regis? I mean, I guess money's money, so you can't really afford to wait, but all these jobs are 6 months or 4 months or whatever. And so a producer contacts you or a director or whatever contacts you for bikes and you don't like the job or the money's not great. And I imagine you think, well, there could be another movie shooting next month that I hear I'm in the running for. How do you balance, Regis, what jobs you take, what jobs you don't, all of that for your company?
we try not to take, not to pass on anything.
Okay. So it doesn't really matter then.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter then. I mean, if we can accommodate them and, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, there may not be the best job coming up, but I don't know the director directly. I don't know that team directly, but if we can go and show up and do a great job and be of a great service to them, then you never know, that director might remember that. And it's happened many times. And then the next show he's on is a $200 million show. And he's like,
okay.
Oh my gosh,
okay. Yeah, yeah.
You were in Beaumont, Texas with me. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, we'll use you guys. You were great. So
oh, okay.
It's always
all right.
Like a, yeah. So we, it's a pretty tight industry as far as word of mouth and stuff like that. That's the predominantly how we get hired. And so like, we try to do everything that we can. I mean, I've done, you know, I literally was last week I was in, oh man, Natchez, Mississippi, you know, doing a very low budget thing for somebody that I, you know, you hear that like they're up and coming guys and you're like, okay, we need to be out there. We need to do that show just because, you know, in 6 months, that guy might be directing a movie now and being like,
okay,
I use this company, you know.
Do you have enough vehicles, staff, people to do two productions at once?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, yeah, before like 2022, when everything was rocking, I mean, we would have four or five different vehicles on a show or on three different shows the same day.
Yeah,
and we have multiple teams like, another really good friend of mine that comes off of Grape Street, I call it. I mean, because on Grape Street, you had right next door to each other at one point. Chris Wheeler lived there. Ryan Raglan lived there. I lived there. Pretty much no adult supervision. And like Dustin Nelson, who is like family to me. I mean, actually, we did become family for a short period of time before our parents kind of messed that up. But so we raced since we were eight, then we came stepbrothers. Now we're friends again. But he just moved out to Georgia, and he's like my he is my go-to guy for like covering me. And then I know we'll get into it, but Red Dog, you know, his life journey brought him out here to Georgia, and that was a funny story. I bought a motorhome and I wanted my family to go enjoy a weekend. So I took him to the dirt bike track at Monster Mountain a few years ago. And I ran into Red Dog and I was like, what are you doing here? And I think the last time he saw me was when you, me and Kelly went and rode at his house.
Yeah.
You know?
2000. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And he recognized me and we got to talking a little bit. And then I was like, well, where do you live? And he was like, I live in this town called Peachtree City. And I'm like, dude, that's where I live. So, he came over to the shop, and then our families have been tight now. So he's part of the program, and
yeah,
he's learning how to do it and get behind camera. And I mean,
it's crazy. I don't even remember when, a few years ago, I just get a photo. I don't know from you or from him. And it's you two together.
Yeah,
and I'm just
exactly.
Like, I'm like, obviously,
how'd that happen?
Right. Like I worked for you in 2000 at KTM for a little bit. You were hurt a lot. And then obviously Red Dog worked for him a ton. And I did not ever have Regis and Red Dog being buddies in my bingo card. Like it was so weird. And then that was great.
Oh, but, dude, yeah. It's been so awesome. I mean, him and Evie and, you know, their whole family, our family's tight. Our wives are tight. They're friends. And like, it literally was, he came by the shop and he was blown away by what happens. And then, you know, he's kind of doing his thing. And I asked him if he wanted to be involved. And then, man, that guy is, I mean, Red Dog is a workaholic. Like he shows up here every day just to help when there's no work. He wants to learn. Obviously he's got the skills to ride motorcycles. I mean, that's not a big thing, but really been trying to get him days on set and learning the camera side of things, because in our world, like I got lucky because it was just me and I had nobody to worry about and we were a little company, but when you're riding the bike, that's, I tell people that's 20% of it. The other 80% is literally trying to understand what the director is trying to get with the camera on your bike. So like you're part of the storytelling process too. You're not just like, go down the road at 20, we'll get it. It's like, no, this car's going around that car. Then you got to dive around that car. And then you can't be too close because we're on a real tight lens. And so there's just a lot more that goes with it that I was able to excel at because it was only me.
Yep.
So then when I get like Dustin and Red Dog and these guys at the shop, and I know that they're phenomenal riders, they get really interested in it because it's not writing. It's like writing is like,
it's like
I need those guys because it's like muscle memory. Like you just get on the bike and you know what you're doing, but you got to pay attention to so much more stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's such a small part of it, right?
Yeah. And I mean, when you're ripping down a sidewalk on a movie at 40 miles an hour and there's extras running and all this, these moto guys are the best at doing it. Any motorcycle guy, because I was trying to explain it to Red Dog in the beginning. I'm like, dude, imagine being on a start and just feeling everything that's happening around you. Mm-hmm. Like, cause you're paying attention to the camera, what you're doing. And then out of the corner of your eye over there, you see someone that's walking across the street that you're going to hit. And you're like, okay, I'm stopping. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, you just don't have that unless you've been behind a gate or, you know, at Southwick in the second moto and you're dying and, you know, John Dowd blows by you, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, it's really cool that you and Timmy and you've been able to help him as well. Yeah. I think one of the last times I talked to him on the phone, we text a lot, but one of the last times I talked to him on the phone, he was on set somewhere. He was somewhere waiting or whatever. So yeah, it's awesome that you've got him involved. It's my two worlds colliding, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was.
Yeah.
So we're super lucky to have him. And, you know, it's just a crazy story that how it happened. But yeah, I couldn't be without him and Dustin and all this. It's like, you know, Dustin went on he did a Morgan Wallen video yesterday in Nashville. So we loaded up the camera bike. I mean, like yesterday is another story. Like I got hired to be a stunt guy and I got hired to be on this show Cape Fear. Mm-hmm. I text you about it. My job yesterday was walking down a hall and I got a fake bedpan full of urine thrown at me. That was my job.
nice.
So I got hit with a metal bedpan probably 15 times and then I went home. But because I had that job, then Dustin, we loaded up the bike and everything, and then he shot up to Nashville, and he shot a whole Morgan Wallen music video and then got back yesterday. So, like, yes, you know, it takes a small army to be available and to be accommodating as well, you know.
What's more sketchy, stunt stuff, being a stuntman, or driving the camera bike? Like, is it the same? I mean, because, you know, stunt thing, they're going to be like, hey, launch off this ramp and jump this boxes or what, you know, whatever, jump over this car, and things like that. But then also I'm thinking the camera thing, we need you to go left, right. Like you got to hit these marks and then we're going to blow something up here. And this pyro is going to go off and you got to go left. Like maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but what's more sketchy?
To me, the camera operating and the camera bike becomes a lot more sketchy. And if you even ask Red Dog, like he was on a TV show, well, the first TV show I put him on, I kind of threw him to the wolves. And he was involved in a high speed chase and he was like, dude, there's a pothole like right down there. I'm going to, you know, so like he literally told me, he's like, I haven't been this nervous for years. I literally haven't. Like there's so much going on. The crazy thing is like the writing in Hollywood, like we get, they're not used to our world at all. Mm-hmm. So we can get there and do a 4-foot jump down some stairs and we get applause. I mean, the like, it's literally of like, really? You know, like that's nothing. So, now it does get sketchy. Like, I don't know. I think it was John Wick 3 or something. We did this gnarly motorcycle chase. And then, I was actually doubling the Asian character and I come off the sidewalk and I do a low side and I got to barely be off the back of my buddy Joe, who then crashes and he flips up onto the Intercontinental Hotel. And that's what that gets a little bit like, you know, it's 3 a.m, it's New York, it's raining, it's cold, and I'm on a street bike, I'm on a Yamaha MT-09, and I've done 7 laydowns, and I'm like, dude, do these people know that at any moment if I high side, I'm done?
Yeah.
You know, and then like, we're not with helmets, and so those moments become like, I don't want to do this anymore, but then you start missing it too, so it's a balance, you know?
Right. How much do you follow the races now? How much do you watch them? All of that.
I'm still hooked. I'm still hook, line, and sinker. I still watch every weekend and enjoy it and, you know, tell my kids I used to do it. They don't believe me, but, you know.
Yeah. Well,
I'm like, whatever. Well, wait till mid-moto and they start lapping people. That's when you would see me predominantly on screen every once in a while, you know.
Yeah, well, that's good. So you're still into it. You still follow a lot of it. That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't get to ride as much as I'd like to. Mm-hmm. Just being older and thinking I'm fast. Years ago, I went down. Matt Walker had his compound, and a bunch of us stunt dudes went down there to watch or to ride, and I knocked myself out, ended up in the hospital.
Did you really? Shit, dude.
Oh, bad, yeah. Like, it wasn't like one of those where I got transported, but it was one of those where I got up, and I was laughing, and I was like, you idiot, like, you shouldn't be out here. You got to go to work. And then I got to the truck, and I looked at my buddy, and I'm like, where are we?
Wow. Yeah.
It was one of those. And I had forgot I moved to Atlanta. I forgot all kinds of stuff for a few days. So I kind of had to put the brakes on all that. Because
do you you mentioned earlier about your racing career, and you thought you were giving it all, and then you realized you kind of weren't. And obviously, you're San Diego kid, El Cajon zone. You watched those guys growing up, like Lachine and Glover and RJ and all those dudes. And then, you know, you had a nice career. You made a bunch of mains. You know, seventh place in a main event, 125 class. Like, a lot of things that 95% of dirt bike racers would love to do, let's say. Do you look at it fondly, or do you look at it like, ah, fuck, I should have tried harder. I should have done this. I should have, like, or do you, you're like, hey, that's pretty cool. Look what I did.
Well, I'm lucky because of where I'm at now. I'm pretty sure that those years defined me, and I learned the lessons of starting a business afterwards and knowing that I didn't, like, my journey brought me from racing to then having a 9-to-5 job. And I, you know, Carter and those guys really, they loved me and they gave me a decent job and stuff. But I lived the real world right after racing and was like, this sucks. So when I got the opportunity to do something that I was a business owner in and that I was kind of in control of my own destiny again, I promised myself that I would give a lot more than I did at racing. And it's not to say that I didn't think I was giving it. I just didn't know. I didn't have, like, you know, now there's trainers and there's guys and there's people. And like back then I was El Cajon zone. I'd wake up at 9, you know, 8:30. I would load the bike and I'm go do a couple motos and be like, dude, I did it. My day's done, you know?
Yeah.
But then I was the guy that on the way back from Palm Avenue would stop at In-N-Out and get a double-double and a shake. And I mean, the world was a little bit different. And I just didn't know, you know? And I thought I was, everybody's like, dude, you got to train more. Like, I mean, I was fast. I had some good lap speed in me and led some heat races, but I was not nearly in shape as I should have. I would get hurt and then I would come back. I would get hurt and I'd come back, but I never went on a road bike. I very rarely rode a mountain bike. And if I was on my mountain bike, it was to find jumps to just go back and do the jump, you know, like, and the sport was a little bit different back then too. It was just as Carmichael and all that started changing, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I know now, looking back, that I was maybe doing 50, 60% of what I should have been doing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it just takes being an adult to be able to look back. But
and obviously, like,
no, I don't.
You know, yeah,
I don't regret it at all.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. You don't regret it?
Oh, I don't regret it at all. I mean, I am who I am because of it. You know, I am forever two wheels. I'm a fan of it. I mean, I don't know many worlds where a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid gets in a box van and has $300 and figures out how to make it 3 months to get 24th at a national.
Yep.
You know, the life lessons I learned, I would never trade for anything. But yeah, the only regret is I look back and I'm just like, man, you could have done, you really could have done better if you would have just, you know, put more into it. But I was young.
Yeah.
I was a kid.
Yeah. We did have fun, though, when we rented that van, me, you, and Kelly. We stayed back in Florida, rode Red Dogs, went swimming. We did a bunch of stuff that couple weeks around Daytona. That was a fun time.
Oh, man. Yeah, we did a whole swing. And,
that was fun.
And that was 2001. That was my last year that I actually raced. So we did good. And, like, oh, funny story about that. We went down to Red Dogs, and we rode. And I just remember Kelly, who I still am just – so stoked to have been part of his family and everything. But I remember he was factory KTM, and I know I did like half the motos that he did that week and did half the work. And then we went to the Supercross Daytona and I got third in the heat race. I don't even know. I mean, it's pretty smooth track, kind of Palm Avenue ish, you know?
Yep.
And then unfortunately Kelly didn't qualify and you guys weren't happy. You guys had to kind of stick around and wait for me to do the main. And I literally felt so bad. I was like, Kelly, I'll trade you spot. Like, will they let us trade? Like, can you go? You know?
Yeah.
So, he was way better than me, but it was just one of those circumstances, you know, I got to start and kind of got lucky. And then
absolutely.
Lap three of the main, I was tired. I think I got like 18th or something. So
Yeah, you know? It's looking back on it, it was a fun time. And obviously your San Diego roots, Moen, Selvarage got you that shot on the team, right? And they knew that, you know, you'd done some well as a privateer and everything else. But then you look back, because I went on to work at Yamaha and after that, and you kind of look back at our bikes with no link and the way our race shop was. And yes, it was factory, quote unquote, KTM, but I don't know, Regis. I mean, obviously money-wise, maybe, but you probably should have stayed on the Yamaha.
Well, yeah, like, you know, I rode for Motorola Del Cajon, and yeah, they, you know, from the very beginning. And then when I got that opportunity, I mean, yeah, like, you know, technically I can say I was a factory rider, but it was the year before they went really big. I mean, you know, they just were getting their feet wet, and we had Shane King and Keith Johnson, Roderick, myself, Kelly. It was, you know, the first year of the semi. So, I mean, yes, my checks did come from KTM. I got a little bit of salary. I did get a mechanic. I did get the flights, but yeah, I wasn't. The next year when it was Brooks and Red Bull and all that, I, you know, that was kind of, we dabbled in it and then they went big. So
right,
technically I was there the first year, but yeah, I know it wasn't the what it is now. So it's not right.
But even back then I was like, geez, our stuff's not that good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I didn't know any better. I again, like, that was one of the things I look back on. Like, I never tested. I never did anything. I was the type of rider that if the bike was kicking me in a rut, mm-hmm, then I just didn't use that rut next lap. Like, that's a shitty rut. I remember it was halfway through the year and Shane King finally kind of went to bat with me and was like, hey, like, I didn't even know you could adjust the power valves on the 125 that year. You know, I mean, you'd started the year with me, and I got, before the season even started, I dislocated my shoulder and all kinds of problems. And then I came back early and you did a race with me. And then at that point,
I started with you, you dislocated your shoulder. They put me with Keith Johnson, New Mexico Keith Johnson. I took him out riding out to Camarillo and dislocated his wrist. And then I went to Kelly. Like, I was starting to be like, what's going on here?
Yeah. And anyways, like, when I came back, I had orthoscopic shoulder surgery before the season. Then I tried to come back early and then had a full shoulder reconstructive. And then my first race back was Southwick, which I probably should never have done.
Yeah.
And then at that point, though, like, I was kind of like, you know, I was lucky to have even gotten that ride and, you know, and was kind of the low man on the totem pole. But I think the next five races, they would just pull, you know, I think the truck driver was my mechanic one weekend. Yeah, and the next weekend was the marketing guy.
No, it was the KJSC guy one weekend. Chuck, the KJSC guy.
Like, every weekend I'd show up and be like, oh, nice to have you. Thanks. You know, and so, like, and I never tested throughout the week. I had a practice bike. I would just go ride, you know. And then I think, you know, at one point Shane King pulled me aside and said, you know, let me ride your bike. We were riding at Palm, and he actually got angry. And then we drove straight to KTM, and he's like, look, you know, but Sol was great too. He needed information from me, and I wasn't giving it to him, you know, and Moen as well. So Sol was like, Shane walked me in and was like, we need to take him riding and explain to him how a dirt bike works, because his bike sucks. And I was like, I think it's great. He's like, no.
The testing days with Moen were great. You had a shock on the bike. He brought another shock. And if you tried the other shock and didn't like it, he would just say, well, we'll put the other one back on. We never actually opened the shock up. There was just A shock and B shock.
Moen is still one of my most favorite people. He's tough and he's rough, but, like, you know, I got to know the jet boat side of Moen bit of the outside. And at first he was so intimidating and stuff. And I remember when I was healthy in the beginning, he was like, let's go to Glen Helen and testing. And I'm like, okay. And we got in the box van and we went there and I did a moto and we came back and he was just kind of sitting there and he's like, well, what do you think? What should we, you want to do anything? And I'm like, nah, it's great. That was our testing day. Like, I did a few more motos and he was like, you know, he wasn't like, it wasn't his fault. Again, it was mine. I point the finger at me. I didn't know any better. So he was like, well, what do you want to try out? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think? And he's like, well, you want to try gearing? And I'm like, sure. You know, like, I just didn't know.
No, really, right? It's really fun to think back to those days. I mean, like I said, there was some frustration for sure, but They were also pretty cool. Like Fane had a really good season on a KTM, right? And Kelly won High Point in the mud, you know? So like, yeah, it was cool to do that with KTM.
Yeah. There was some cool moments on that team. And
Shane, it was cool having Shane there. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember at Unadilla, I mean, you know, like I said, I came back at Southwick and actually qualified for the National, was all super excited. And then I actually damaged my kidneys because I couldn't stand up anymore and I just sat down everywhere. And then I remember Unadilla, I got 20th and I thought it was the grip. For me, I scored a point. I was like, yes. But I got back to the truck and that was the moto that Roderick nearly won. And then his bike, Stator or something. And I got back to the truck and I've never seen someone have an emotional breakdown. Roderick was, I don't know if you remember, but he was throwing helmets and I was like, I scored a point. Let's do that. I was so excited. And I was like, oh man, he's angry. What happened to him? And they're like, dude, he almost won.
Yeah, he was crushing it. I do remember that. Poor Rags. Rags probably still has nightmares.
Yeah, Rags. But... yeah. I mean, it wasn't Rags' doing, but, you know, just being a part of it. So
Fly Racing, Racer X Podcast, Regis Harrington. So obviously I mentioned growing up in El Cajon and you have some great stories, not all that you can publicly share of hanging out with Dogger and other guys, but for the record, like what are some of the cool moments you remember from being a little 80 rider and having all these guys around, RJ, Glover, Lachine, Burnworth, like what were some of the cool moments?
Man, I had like the dream where I lived. And my mom was a single mom and she cut hair. So she did like Brock's hair and like a lot of people knew of my mom, like, cause at the time it wasn't as big as it was. So it was kind of a smaller town and we were moto. My mom did hair. So I'd get out of school. My mom would be like, hey, they're riding. And I'm like, okay. We'd load up and we'd shoot over to, I mean, there were so many tracks back then. There was Bader's, like Bader Monet had a track, and then Mike Fisher had a track, and then like Larry Brooks and Mike Craig, and Shadow Mountain was, you know, Lachine's, and we'd just hear rumors of where they're at, and we'd show up, and there'd be box fans there, and like literally RJ would be doing motos, and Burnworth would be doing motos, and I'd show up, and then those guys knew me well enough to be like, okay, hey, you can ride. And then they'd pull me off and be like, yep, we're going to ride.
Oh, really?
And so I'd just sit there. Yeah, because like they didn't want me on the track. I wasn't, you know, and these were hills. These were tracks that were burned into the hills. So a lot of them were goat trails and stuff. So I was like, they didn't want to come around testing and have an 80 kid laying in the track or, you know, going backwards or something. So, but it was like kind of cool. I was known as the kid that like would just show up. Like I'd show up and we'd park our little truck and I'd ride over to the box van and I'd just wait till they told me your turn and then I'd go ride, you know? So,
yeah.
And then it was awesome. Like even at a young age, Mike Craig would take me riding and stuff and we'd go to Palm Avenue and there would be, you know, like there'd just be everybody out there just doing motos and stuff. And then I was kind of Mike's little, like, he was helping me a lot. So like, he made me a better rider, but I would be in tears most of the time because he'd come over and tell me, you can do that lift jump. And I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yep.
And then he would tell everybody else, like, watch him do this. And then he'd be like, third gear wide open. And I'd be like, no. And he'd look at me and say, like, you're not getting in the truck unless you do it, or I'm not taking you home. And dude, I'd hit this thing third gear wide open, tears in my eyes, and I'd make it. And he'd be like, see, I told you. And I was like, okay, can we go home now?
You're like, I just saw my life flash before my eyes.
Yeah, and all the dudes were cheering me on. I'd come back, I'd get head rubs and high fives. And, you know, and then a lot of people would give Mike shit, like, don't do that to him. And he'd be like, no, he can do it. Just, you know, dropping F-bombs. Just do it. Listen to me. And I'd be like, oh, God, I'm not getting out of this.
Yeah, there's just no way, right?
But, yeah, but he never got me hurt or nothing like that. He really did push me to be better. So that was cool. And then, but yeah, El Cajon, I mean, I was always lucky.
Was Brock done racing? Brock was done racing by the time you were.
Yeah. Brock was like, I was 65s on Brock.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean? Like I was like zero, I was like 8 years old and I'd show up and Brock would be riding. And then he was one of the guys that got his haircut at my mom's salon. So my mom would even call me and I'd ride my bicycle down just to hang out in the salon because Brock Glover was there. And I'd just sit, you know, and then he'd shake my hand and I'd be like, okay, cool. And I'd leave, you know? And so like I even see Brock, if I were to see him to this day, he still remembers me as the kid in the beauty shop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
Like, so
yeah. Pretty like as a kid, I grew up in Canada, right? Reading MXA and just reading about all these dudes and reading about the El Cajon zone. And I did get to go to Palm Avenue with Marty Smith when I stayed with Marty for a couple weeks. He took me to Palm Avenue a couple of times. So I got to go to the place where RJ shot the video, you know, all of that shit, right? And it was
the world's worst riding area in the world.
I know, right? But when you're in Canada looking at MXA or watching that cheesy video, you're like, this is where I've got to go.
I took Kelly Smith there one time when you guys were down, when he came down in 99, actually before you, okay. In 99, he would come down to El Cajon because KTM was there and stuff. And then Sel called me. I was like, hey, Kelly Smith's in town. Would you take him riding? I'm like, yeah. And I took him to Palm Avenue and he did like three laps and he looked at me and said, don't ever bring me here again.
Yeah. Wasn't ideal. But
yeah, I mean, it was just
for me, being
blue groove and rocks. And he's like, this isn't even motocross. This is.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Marty was like, I was on a CR125 he borrowed from some buddy of his, and he's on a KX250, and he's like, let's play tag. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so you would hit the guy with your bike, and that's tag. You're it. And now I had to turn around and chase him through Palm Avenue, which he knew every rock and rut and bump. And I'm like, dude, I don't know where I'm going. And like, then it would be his turn, and he'd just cut in front of me and hit me in the swing arm and be like, you're it. And then take off. And I'm like, this is not fun. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm with Marty Smith and we're playing tag in the hills.
Well, I got a true life, funny Palm story, Palm Avenue story. Back on the 85 days with Mike and all the guys that were there, somehow we got into those bunny trails and going in and out of chicanes and stuff. And they left me and I turned the corner and was probably second gear on the pipe. And I ran into three illegals, like literally.
No way.
Yes. And I got up and these guys were looking at me and I was looking at them and they just bolted into the trees. And yeah. I was like,
Mexico.
But I was too young to even realize what
people don't know. The Mexican border is not far. Right.
You can literally ride to the border wall from the tracks. And so I didn't even know what I had just done. And then I got back and the guys were laughing so hard. They're like, were they hurt? Like I hit a deer or something. I'm like, no, they just ran. And they're like, and they're like, oh my gosh. And I was so, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, no, it's awesome. Now, pretty cool time growing up for you. Because obviously I've known you for so long and you filled me full of stories. Like I said, some you can't tell, but
some
great stories from El Cajon and growing up as a kid watching Brooks and Craig and Dogger and Burnworth and the drama, the off-track drama too, all going on, all of that, right?
Yeah, it was a crazy life, but it molded me into who I am, and I'm grateful for it for sure.
No, absolutely. Know? Well, hey man, thanks for the time on the podcast. I'm glad Covert's going so well. It's really, really cool to see you be successful, and then also you and Red Dog, who knew. So it's great, man. Yeah
Well, thank you so much. I would like to we are doing something a little fun here. If anybody wants to like check it out or anything, I'm about to launch our a YouTube channel called The Covert World.
Okay.
Because we get so much behind the scenes of just pure comedy of what happens here when we're prepping for jobs or actually how we get ready for jobs. Mm-hmm. And then the whole premise behind the video and the channel is to show like what it takes to get these shots. And then and then we'll show the shots that we get in these movies. And, I think it's pretty cool. It's a little bit soon to, there's a couple videos up there now, but mm-hmm. I'd love for anybody that's interested to hit up The Covert World on YouTube. We'll be dropping some new content soon. And it's fun. We got Red. Yeah. I got all kinds of video of Red Dog, and just I'm a ADD motocross business owner, and just so many shots of Red Dog looking at me like you're an idiot. I mean, so for that content alone, when it drops, I think everybody should watch it. So
no, that'd be great.
Be great.
I'll subscribe. I'll hit that subscribe button on it for sure.
And
then I guess let me just coolest. Who's coolest movie star that you've hung out with? These guys don't have a lot to do with stunt people and covert camera operators, but like, what are they? What's some of the?
Yeah, I mean, a lot – there's – I'll give you just a couple examples. But, like, literally everybody freaks out about Tom Cruise being a weirdo and kind of being like
– No, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I've never seen anyone in my life that is so dedicated to his craft.
Seems like it.
And works so hard at what he does. And case in point was Jack Reacher 2. We filmed it in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And basically – the whole movie is him running. And so I was involved in like every shot, like either in front of him, next to him, or behind him. And a lot of times I was like, and in these moments, a lot of time I get to see the real people because it's only us back at where we're starting.
Yep.
And I can see what they're doing to get ready or what they'll say. And, you know, we introduced people, I introduced myself and he did. And then, but on the camera bike, like day one, he would literally come to me and tell me how fast he was going to run, like to the mile an hour. Like, he's like, I'm going to do this one at like, I'm going to pick it up, Reach. I'm going to do about 15 on this one. You're going to be good with that? I'm like, yeah, no problem. And then we would take off and I'd look at my Speedo and it would be like right on 15. Yep. I'm like, how does it, you know? And then it'd get late in the night and he's like, hey man, I'm tired. I'm going to slow this one down like 10. I don't know. 12:13 I'll be. I'm like, okay. And I look down and my speedometer was bouncing from 12 to 13.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy is a machine. Like,
there's a whole thing about Tom Cruise running in movies also, by the way. There's a thing about him running.
Well, and that's one of the greatest moments I think I've ever had from behind the scenes was like in that movie, he had a co-star I think her name is Colby Smulders or Colby or something.
From
and
Avengers?
She's in it.
Yeah. Avengers. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm back there and he was chastising her about how she was running. And I was like trying not to look and see it. And she was like, Tom. And he's like, no, you don't get it. And he was just, I could hear his voice, Top Gun, Days of Thunder. He's like, and he was like, you have to do it like this. And I looked back and he was doing like these karate chops.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, man. Like he's going hard. Like,
wow.
You know, she's like, all right, I'll do it. And he's like, you don't get it. Like, it's just, and he would explain it. And then I'd watch it on my playback or I'll watch it in the movies. And I'm like, dude can run.
Mm-hmm.
The dude knows how to movie run. Like nobody can movie run. And that was like, I got to see it and I just got to like get this whole different feeling of how serious he takes. And he would literally have these conversations with the crew. Like, I know this is a moment in your day, but we're making something that's going to last forever. And it really resonated because he seems spot on.
He seems all in on everything he does. Obviously, the last Mission Impossible, not the new one, but the last one, he did the Honda off of a cliff, you know.
And he did. And there's behind, I mean, there's footage that you can find. If you guys look on YouTube, there's footage of him riding a moto track and he's not bad. And he's over 60 years old and he's doing doubles and tabletops. And he would demand that he would go train on the dirt bike for a couple hours before his, you know, and like you see him ride and you're like, that's pretty impressive, you know. And then
didn't Godbod help him with that? Wasn't Godbod doing that track?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe they did it up in near Castaic for a couple of days. I mean, but like he takes it that serious. Like, I'm gonna parachute. I'm gonna ride off this ramp, but I need to know everything about the dirt bike. I need to jump it. I need to go do this. And they'd put him on a track with tables and, you know, a vet friendly track. But he would do all the jumps. It was pretty cool.
He's doing press for the new Mission Impossible that just came out, and there's these things on Instagram about him eating popcorn, and like he even eats popcorn. Like super intensely, like he grabs the popcorn and throws it in his mouth. You're like, this guy for real right here? Like he's not even eating popcorn like a human. So
yeah, and then I really love in that movie El Camino, the spinoff of Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay, I never saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a movie like the Breaking Bad stopped, and then they did like an actual theatrical release, like continuation of it called El Camino. And I doubled Aaron Paul on that one.
Okay.
And man, he's a gem of a human being.
Oh, is he?
He's really cool. Yeah, he's cool. And then like on Jurassic World, Chris Pratt is like a man's man. Like you could literally go have a beer with him.
Yep.
He's the coolest dude in the world. It was like 102 degrees. And I was sweating and I was just miserable on this camera bike and I don't get the umbrella and I don't get the water.
Right,
and I'm holding up a 800-pound motorcycle that is full of camera gack. And I have my head on my handlebars and I hear this voice like, man, this bike is really cool. And I'm like, I didn't even lift my head up. I'm like, yep, really cool. You know, and he's like,
real cool, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, is it electric? And by this time, of having the electric bike around, I thought of having cards in my pocket that I could just hand people that would just answer every question.
Every question
it was the same
yeah.
question.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, it's electric. It doesn't make. And so I'm like, I never even lifted my head and I'm like, yep, it's electric. And like, I felt like, and then finally I picked my head up and I looked and I realized it was Chris Pratt. And I was like, oh, hey. And he goes, no, man, it's okay. Lay down. I know you're hot. And I'm like, I was just the biggest, I just movie starred Chris Pratt.
You did. Yeah,
like
totally
like, yeah, buddy. Can't you tell? No exhaust. Like, yep, it's electric. Like I didn't say that, but
yeah,
I just,
yeah, yeah.
Had I known who it was, I would, I mean, I'm a genuine person. I try to be nice to everybody, but I was just having a bad day. And so like, and then he shook my hand and was like, man, you are just really killing it out here. Thanks for being a part of the project. And I'm like, man, these guys are,
yeah.
So the majority of them, they're good guys.
I did hear from, I think RT or Castillo, one of them got the speech from the stunt director. Like, hey man, don't look at these guys. Don't, you know, unless they say something to you, do not look at them. Don't acknowledge them. I'm like, really? Like, come on, man.
Well, yeah. I haven't really had that experience. Right. I will tell you the worst ones are like the B-level guys that are either on their way out mm-hmm. or they're on their way up and they think they're those people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those guys are the guy, like, I literally want to look back and be like, hey, bro, you're not there yet. You don't have the right to talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, I've been around so many of them. I'm like, really? Like, I had one guy, like, you know, all the A-list guys get in a black car. I mean, they yeah. literally will, like, if you're at base camp, which is 500 yards away, mm-hmm. a car will bring the actor up to set. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of the big, big actors that are like, no, I'll yeah. walk. It's right there.
Yeah.
But then I've been in a van where I'm sitting waiting to go to set, and, like, the B guy will get in and get on the phone and be like, they don't even have a car for me. This is ridiculous. And I'm like, dude,
yeah.
Really?
Well,
like, you know.
I tell people this in my world. Like, I'm interviewing all these motocross people, right? And some of the biggest people that have been most pissy with me about silly season stuff or breaking news or whatever are like the B-level teams, and DaCosta
yeah.
and Peyton and Ross Maeda and name them, the big guy, like legends, don't care. These guys don't care. They're like, they understand I got a job to do. Here's my job. Here's what Mathis does, right? And they just don't care, man. And it's the guys that you're like, dude, your team kind of sucks. Don't worry about it. Like, nobody cares.
Yeah, that is literally Red Dog and I joke because he's never been a part of this world.
Right.
And he is now. But there is so much correlation between, and I tell Evie and Evan, I tell the fairies all the time, like, there should really be a reality show based on the fence line of a supercross,
yeah,
like
yeah.
in the pits. Like, if you could get people to be who they are and what they are, like, mm-hmm. but the movie industry is the same way. Like,
yep.
camera operator will be on this movie, and then the next movie is on a different team, and
yeah.
you see the same people, you talk about the same things, and the stunt team is, you know, that guy saw. It's just, it's the same thing,
yeah.
exactly, just
yeah.
in a different industry.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
The same thing, like, a stunt guy will come up, and he'll have had an opportunity to do a really cool stunt in the movie before, and then he shows up, now he's got new sunglasses and a leather jacket, and you're like, dude, you're not Reynolds. You got, you know,
yeah.
like, take it and be who you were last week.
Right.
So Tim is kind of, Red Dog's kind of like, yeah, he always will just look at me like, oh my God, dude, this is so motocross. I'm like, it is.
It is. And I remember, man, when I worked for him and he was a podium guy making over $1 million a year, like one of the big guys. And I saw that dude treat regular fans that knew him from the Jersey days when he rode for RRP. Like, he would treat those guys like they were his best friend in the world, always. Like, Timmy did not
care.
I'm
telling you.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so cool because he's so unassuming. We'll be on a movie set mm-hmm. and, like, you know, our sport is relatively small to these Hollywood people. But the crew that rides and stuff, they'll literally come up to me and be like, hey, Reed. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, is that Tim Ferry? And I'm like, yeah. And then I'll look over, I'm like, hey, Timmy. He's like, what? I'm like, give me a Coke. And he's like, yeah, I got it for you. And they're like, what did you do? You just Tim Ferried to go. You know, but I do
yeah.
it as a joke. But
yeah,
then
yeah.
Timmy comes back over, I'm like, that guy over there right there is freaking out that you're on set.
Yeah.
And
no,
I feel good about it, you know? And then the guy will come over and get an autograph, and then they'll talk moto. And it's like, it's so cool for me to even have him part of the team.
Yeah.
Same thing with Dustin. Like, I've been in the middle of North Carolina and someone's like, that's Dustin Nelson. I'm like, yep. And he's like, he won the he was the West Coast quad champion.
Four-stroke guy, yeah.
Four-stroke champion, you know, and then he got into quads, and I'm like, yep, that's him, you know. And and then so, like, the levels of it are pretty cool.
Yep. No, because, for sure.
Like, but Tim gets recognized a lot on the movie sets by the crews, and then they'll always pull me inside and be like, please tell me that's Tim Ferry.
Is that the Summercross champion? Is that the Summercross champion?
Yeah. And then I'll tell everybody, like, yeah, he won Summercross, but you are not even giving me the credit for getting third at Summercross either.
Yes, yeah, right, exactly.
You know, and then people are like, what? What are you talking about?
What the fuck is Summercross?
Exactly. So the crew here at Covert is top-notch. I mean, you know, we even got a guy from Australia, Mark Turrell. We call him the Terminator. I mean, everybody just comes from moto, you know, and the skill set translates so good. I couldn't be more grateful for who's around here for sure.
Let's end on this. Speaking of Terminator, you did the last one with Arnold. Arnold seems like a great guy. Seems cool. Can you verify that?
I unfortunately did all the second unit stuff, and that in Spain, and I never got the opportunity to meet.
The freeway chase, right, with the chicks?
Yeah, with the big yellow truck that's crushing things.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you a video that's pretty cool. You might have saw it on my Instagram, but I split these two cars, and that yellow thing launches them from behind. But yeah, we did that in, I think it's called Murcia, Spain, and we a lot of times we're on the action unit, so we don't get to work with the actual directors or the actual stars on a lot of stuff. So they just edit that in, make it look like part of the movie.
Yeah, that's what they do. Well, listen, Regis, really cool to catch up with you. I'm glad you're doing well, and we text enough back and forth. And man, super stoked for everything that's going on with Covert. And check out the YouTube camera, Covert camera channel. And thanks for the Fly Racing Race podcast.
The Covert World. All right. Thanks, buddy. Okay. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks, Regis. Later.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners.